Hey guys, I'm Natasha Colvin and this is Conversations with Tosh. On this channel, I chat with designers and game changers in the fashion industry. Conversations with Tosh is dedicated to raw, honest, and fun discussions about the behind the scenes of being in the business. Enjoy! Hey guys, today I'm speaking with Susie Hio, designer of the label My Mia. My Mia focuses on swimwear that can also be incorporated into your everyday wardrobe as layering pieces. I'm so excited to pick Susie's brain as she has such an incredible background in the fashion industry. A Parsons alum, Susie got her start working for Helmut Lang and Prabal Gurung in New York City. She then moved to LA and started designing for mega brands like Nasty Gal and Revolve. Other successes include designing all of the tour merch for the Chainsmokers, which is pretty cool. My Mia uses sustainable fabrics from consumer wastes like fishing nets, industrial plastic waste, and fabric scraps. Not only that, all pieces have SPF 50 plus UV protection. Hello.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I'm well. How are you?
Good. Is everything working okay?
Are you in? Yeah. Everything's great. Are you in LA right now?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Are you there full time or?
Yeah, I live here. I've lived here for like 9 years now.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So actually that gets me to what I wanted to talk about first, because you have such a rich fashion background and I just like want to pick your brain. So you went to Parsons.
Yeah.
Did you always want to be a designer? Did you always want to work in fashion? What led you to attend Parsons?
So I grew up having always being interested in art. And so at a very young age, my parents kind of knew that. And then also kind of just encouraged me to take art classes as extracurricular, out of school. And so I was always taking classes and I just didn't know what type of art I wanted to do until I went to high school. And then I took this fashion design course in freshman year, I think. But after I took that course, I was so interested in it. And it was I was super passionate about it. So then I decided freshman year that I wanted to go to Parsons. And so I was taking art classes from elementary to all the way to the end of high school, Wow. outside of school. So I applied to Parsons early admission, and then I got in early. So I got into Parsons probably early senior year.
And what art did you do? Did you paint?
When you apply for art school, you kind of have to submit a portfolio of mm-hmm. All these different types of art, whether it's painting or still life. And so I did a lot of charcoal and then pencil drawings and then a lot of fashion illustrations too.
Amazing. So you went to Parsons. What was that like? Were you taking design courses or mostly art classes?
Yeah, so I applied for the fashion design program, and so I was in that program, and Parsons was really, honestly, so crazy.
Really? How so?
I mean, it was just a completely different experience from, all the other college experiences that my friends had. When I hear about their experiences, skipping classes, going to frat parties, I'm like, what is that even?
Yeah. Wait, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Jersey.
Okay, so close to New York.
Yeah, so I was always going into New York to take the art classes anyway, so I was very familiar with the city, and then when I went to Parsons, I moved into the dorms in around Union Square.
Okay.
So, yeah, Parsons was just crazy because the classes were really demanding, and we had 6-hour studio classes, and then we would have to take another 3-hour extra class on top of that, so we'd be in class for 9 hours straight and then have to come home and make all the drape, make patterns and sew samples together. And so we were just up all night all the time. We always pulled all-nighters at least once a week. like at a minimum once a week. And so honestly, school was hell.
I didn't know it was that brutal.
Yeah, it was so crazy. And I think like in hindsight though, it really prepared me for the real world because I just hated school so much. And like, it just took so much out of me that like now when I'm working, I'm like, this is amazing.
I was the exact same way. Yeah, I went to NYU and I was interning a lot and I would just like escape class and like be so excited to go to my internships and just wanted to graduate.
Yeah, it was really cool because like NYU was so close. So I had a lot of friends at NYU and we also got to share like the NYU library, like Parsons students had access to that.
Oh, cool.
So it like kind of felt like normal because we were so close with NYU. And so I kind of got to experience like a little bit of like normal college. Like we still went out and like partied and stuff, but it was just so different from like going to a school in any other state besides New York.
Yeah.
Because we, like, the way we went out is, like, going to bars and clubs, like, not going to, like, frat parties.
Yeah.
But actually, like, I didn't finish school. I ended up, like, so Parsons was really crazy in that, like, it has a really crazy attendance policy. Uh-huh. So if you miss the studio classes 3 times in that year, you automatically fail that class and you have to redo your entire year. So it was like my junior year and 2 lates equals 1 absence. And a late is considered if you're 20 minutes late. That's like... So for one of my studio classes, it was literally the last week of junior year. I had 2 absences and like 1 late. And I was like working on this final project and I stayed up all night to do it. And then I had like 2 or 3 hours before class started. So I was just like, okay, I'm just going to take a quick little nap.
Oh no.
That was the worst decision of my life because like I'm a very hard sleeper. So like once I fall asleep, like I cannot hear anything. And it's still like that today. Like my husband has to be like, wake up.
Yeah.
So I overslept and then I got to class like 30 minutes late. And like, I had like 50 missed calls from my classmates. And like, anyways, I get to class and I'm just like pleading with the teacher. And he's just like, I'm so sorry, but like, I need to fail you. And I was like, but this is the last week and I'm only 10 minutes late. Like, could you please, you know, like give me a pass on this? And he basically was just like, no, you'd have to talk to the dean. So then I like talked to the dean and he basically like, after all my pleading, he basically said that like, if I grant you this, then like, that's not fair to all the other students that we've failed in the past and blah, blah, blah. So basically they told me I had to take junior year all over again. And like, my parents are immigrants and like, they're from Korea and, you know, failing out of college is not an option.
Yeah. Yeah. No, completely. I get you.
That was definitely a dark, hard time in my life. I think like, yeah, the memories are just so dark, but and like, you know, having that conversation with my parents was really hard because they just don't understand. Like, I feel like we live in a generation where like it's very common for people to be entrepreneurs and start their own thing, but like our parents' generation is like very conventional way of like having a job, like working at a corporation or a factory, you know? And so like their understanding of success is so different from ours. And anyways, the conversation actually didn't go as bad as I thought because I kind of just pleaded with my mom and I was just like, listen, like, I'm already interning right now. Like I'm learning so much more from working and I feel like I can just start making money and like you can stop supporting me because throughout college she was supporting me financially. And it ended up being like the best decision I made to not go back to school because I had like a year head start from everyone else in my class to like start working, which would build my experience and like give me more opportunities for like jobs in the future. Mm-hmm. So it was a blessing in disguise. And I feel like it also like lit this like fire in me where I felt like I needed to really step it up and prove to myself and my parents that like I can still succeed without a college degree. And I feel like it's like at those times where like you're at the lowest point in your life, where your decisions are like what makes or breaks you, you know?
Completely. No, that's a wild story. I can't believe that.
Are you going to pick yourself up and like, you know, write a different narrative for your life? Or are you going to just like close the door right there and just completely. Like give up, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like that really like ignited a really huge drive in me to like always do better. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So you
didn't graduate, and then was your first job at Helmet?
Yeah, but I was only there for like a month. So I feel like I vaguely have memories of that. And that was over 10 years ago. So I like barely remember what I did there. I feel like the more significant like job that I had was like interning for Prabal Gurung, and like this was when he was still like a fairly new designer. Mm-hmm. It was really awesome because he was in the CFDA like incubator.
Right, I remember that. Okay.
So they have like all of these like designers, maybe like 8 designers in this one building, and it was like the 2 designers from public school were across the hall from us, and a lot of like up and coming designers. And so it was really fun, like being in that atmosphere, and also just being like super new to the industry. Like everything was just like amazing, you know?
How big was the team then, the Prabal team?
Very small. So it was just like Prabal, his assistant designer, and then me and another intern.
Wow, so, that's amazing.
Yeah. And then like, I mean, that was just the design. And then he had like one business partner and like a finance person. But in the design, it was just us 4. And so it was like a super hands-on job where like, and I think like because me and the other intern were so great at like doing our job that he really trusted us to do a lot of things. And so we would like go to the factories, pick up patterns and like pick up samples and then like attend all like the model fittings. And eventually he also like let us like when we had time to do like sketches, and he'd pick a couple sketches and like add it to the collection. And it was just like a really exciting time.
Wow, what an amazing experience that must have been.
Yeah. And like Anna Wintour came to the office, and all these like huge models at the time, like Karlie Kloss. Mm-hmm. So it was just like, you know, like even though it was just an internship, I feel like I've like learned so much from that, and just from like working with him. And he was just so nice and amazing and just like super down to earth. And I just feel like I learned a lot from that experience.
How long did you work for him?
Probably for like a year, I would say.
Okay, and then you moved to LA?
Yeah.
Okay, and then so tell me about that, because that's a whole nother story that I want to hear about.
This is a long story. I don't know if you want to hear. Like, I've had like so many different jobs here.
You were at Nasty Gal.
Well, no.
So you moved to LA. Where did you start in LA? Okay.
The first job I ever had was at this private label company that doesn't exist anymore. And it was like, I got the job like through a Skype interview. So I was interviewing in New York, and then I got the job in LA. So then I moved here. And then that, I feel like, wasn't really that significant to my life. It was a very short period. And then from there, I moved on to BCBG. And I was like an associate designer there. And I was brought on to do sweaters, but like no shade on BCBG. Like I think it's an amazing company, but like I came into the job feeling like this is a stepping stone for me because their aesthetic was just not really in line with mine. And I feel like it was like very corporate there. Like it was a huge, huge company, like hundreds of thousands of employees.
Wow.
And so I was like an associate designer for sweaters there, and sweaters, like I had no idea how to make sweaters.
Yeah.
But I'm like a really quick learner. So it was just like, you know, once you start making sweaters, you realize it's just doing like technical specs. You're basically just like speccing out garments and like sending that to a factory and telling them to knit it in this size. Mm-hmm. And so we would do that for sweaters, which also was like the bandage dresses that like Leger did. Like those are considered sweaters because they're all fully knit. So that was a really cool experience. And I feel like I learned a lot from there just about like garment, like technical things about garment making, like measurements. Like I know measurements like off the top of my head just from that job, which is really great. But as I was there, I was kind of just figuring out like where I really wanted to work, because when I first moved to LA like 9 years ago now, which is crazy.
Wow.
It flies. In LA, because I feel like it's like there's no seasons. So
yeah.
Just like don't know when it's winter or fall, and then it's just, it's crazy. And then 9 years go by.
Yeah.
So yeah, when I was there, I was trying to figure out like where I wanted to work, because I feel like when I moved here, LA wasn't that big on like the fashion scene compared to New York. And so there weren't that many companies to really work for that were reputable in a sense. But then like towards the end of my time at BCBG, I saw like this brand called Nasty Gal, and they were starting to really pick up traction. And then like, you know, the more I went on the website, the more I was just like, oh my God, this is like completely my style. This is like, you know, 8 years ago, I was like, my style was completely different. And I was so into like what they were putting out. And I just felt like it was so edgy and new and different. And so I really, really wanted to work there. And I feel like I'm a very tenacious person. So like, if I want to do something, I will find a way.
Yeah. So, I mean, a great quality to have.
Yeah. So then I was just like, you know, doing heavy like internet trolling and like looking for, not trolling, like internet searching and like looking for someone that I knew that worked there. And I actually came across someone on LinkedIn, this girl named Megan that I kind of knew from my first job here at the private label company. And she was like a senior designer there. So I was just like, oh my God, I know someone, like I have an in. So I mean, like I messaged her on LinkedIn, but then it was apparent that she doesn't check her LinkedIn.
Right.
And then I went on the Nasty Gal website and I go to like the contact us form, and you kind of like see how the email is set up for that company. So then I like sent emails of like different variations of Megan's name.
Right.
Like at shopnastygal.com. And it was like, I did that. It was like, you know, Megan.m@nastygal.
Right.
And, you know,
all the possibilities.
Exactly. And one of them went through and she was just like, oh my God, I totally remember you. Yeah, like I would love for you to come in for an interview. And so it was amazing. And then I got the job and it was just like awesome.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. Working at Nasty Gal was amazing because like when I started there, it was still like a pretty small company. By the time I left, it was like massive.
Yeah, wow.
When I started, it was so small and intimate, and like, you know, I really loved working there. The work environment was just like super like fun, like really on brand with their brand. Mm-hmm. All the designers and I were like super, super close. It was like going to work and hanging out with your best friends all day. Mm-hmm. Like in hindsight, it was a dream job.
Yeah. What is a design job like? So like, are you sketching all day? What is the, like, I don't know. I just have no idea how that works.
I feel like the sketching part is so like minimal compared to all the other parts, because I feel like every day is not the same. Because you're always kind of figuring out a better way and a new way to do things that's like more efficient and faster. And so I guess like a job in fashion is like, you know, you work within like deliveries or seasons that you want to deliver collections by. And so you kind of backtrack from that delivery date and start building a collection in however long that time of development needs, you know?
Right.
So if you want a summer collection, you backtrack maybe like a year or so. And then
the whole year?
Yeah. Like back then it was like longer lead times. I think now it's gotten a little shorter because fashion has become like a lot quicker.
Yeah.
So we would design probably like a year in advance, because there's so many like steps to the process of the final product. Before you get to the final product, it's like you have to come up with the concept, the color palette, and like with every step of the way, you have to have a meeting to get everything approved, you know, by the buyers and like by everyone. So every process just takes like a really long time. And then you're also like in fittings all day. Like every other day it was a fitting. And like, you kind of just design like in between the times. I feel like there's not much time to design because you're doing a lot of like office work, responding to like vendors and like making corrections and doing fittings for like half the day. And so I feel like as a designer, you're constantly just like looking for inspiration. Like, yeah. And it's become like a habit. Like I still do that all the time, like screenshotting, saving all day. Like There's no like time off. Mm-hmm. I feel like anything I see that inspires me, I'll always like bookmark it and save it somewhere because I know like later in the future, I'll like reference back and use it.
Feel like brands like Revolve and Nasty Gal are very reliant on the current trends. Does that make it difficult to be designing a year in advance when you don't necessarily know what the trends will be the next summer?
Yes and no. I feel like Nasty Gal was a little more daring in a sense, where they were very open to like a new idea.
Yeah.
Because they were very much like kind of a trend-setting brand. Yeah. And so a lot of people just kind of believed in what we were putting out. And I feel like, you know, as a designer, that's kind of like a dream come true. But there's always setbacks with like the buyers as well, because as a designer, you want to push the creative, but then the buyers also like
try
to give you realistic feedback about like what's been selling and what's not. And, you know, realistically, like the more basic styles always do sell better, because there's like a small percentage of people that really are like edgy and want something new, you know?
Yeah.
So I think like finding like a balance between both. But I don't know. I think as a designer, you kind of just are forecasting like what's coming up.
Yeah, very true.
So it was just, I never thought of it like that. Like if it's hard to predict a trend, I feel like I always just have like a new idea in mind. And so now with like social media, it's just like, there's so many ideas like running around all the time.
Yeah.
It's like too much information now.
Yeah, completely. So how many, like, were you, how much creative freedom did you have when designing? Like, were you told, okay, make some, like, design some skirts for next spring or?
Yeah, so like, there's always a merch plan that you receive. And so they'll be like, we want like X amount of tops, X amount of bottoms, wovens, knits, like, etc. So it's kind of like the buyers will set a merch plan, and then you kind of design a collection within that merch plan that kind of is very cohesive and works well together. And yeah, that's how you do it.
Wow, that's amazing. So you were at Nasty Gal for how many years?
I think 2.5.
And then did you go to Revolve right from there?
Yeah. So I was lucky in that, like, my boss that hired me at Nasty Gal, she actually went to Revolve first.
Wow.
And so she was like either the design director or like head of design there. And so she brought me on when, as a designer, to start this new line that Revolve was starting called NBD.
Of course I'm familiar.
Okay. So like they brought me on to start the line, which was like perfect for my aesthetic because, you know, it's very in line with like Nasty Gal, and NBD's like sexy party going out dresses. And so that was like what I designed and like what I really love to make, even though it's like not really what I wear.
Right.
But aesthetic, like I love like drawing, like making like sexy pieces. So it was just like, it felt like the right transition, and it was an amazing opportunity to like start this new brand and like being the only designer. Like I didn't have an assistant when I started. It was just me. And then, yeah, when I started Revolve and started MDD, it quickly became like the number one brand on the site out of like the hundreds of retailers that they had, which was amazing and like super exciting. So yeah, when I started Revolve, MDD was like the third private label line that they started.
And now they have?
By the time I left, it was like 16 lines.
So how many years, what year were you, did you create MBD?
Let me check.
I'm just trying to think, like, at what point had Revolve already blown up?
2014, maybe.
Okay. So it was pretty big then, Revolve.
It was, like, it was starting to get big, but not, yeah, not in the way that it is now, you know?
Right. Like, it was prior to all those influencer, like, trips and everything.
Exactly. So it was, like, still very small. We were in a really small office. Like, Revolve is one entity, and they're in Cerritos, and then their private label company, which is where we worked, was called Alliance Apparel. And so, like, it was a totally different building downtown. It was super small, like,
gotcha, small
people. But then, yeah, like, once I was there for a while, it really started to get grow quickly. Mm-hmm. And so, like, moved out of that small little building, and then now they're downtown in this building. And at first we were like two floors, and now I think they own like four of the floors. It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah, it's growing.
So how long were you working in the MBD space
without the whole time that I was there?
Okay.
So, yeah, so then eventually they like let me hire an assistant for me because it was just, you know, adding up to right. be a lot. And then they also let me add this new line called X by MBD, which is a more expensive line with like embroidery and like real leather and things like that, because MBD had to be a certain price point.
But right.
But then I had so many ideas. I was just like, I want to create all this stuff. And so they yeah. like created this line called X by MBD, which is a much higher price point.
Right. How do you cater? So you're given a price point. How do you cater to that? By only using specific fabrics that are cheaper, or
it's like, yeah, fabrics is definitely a factor. We always price out all the fabrics before we design into them, so I know like if this is an expensive fabric, I'm gonna, you know, use less trims and like less like piecing together, you know what I mean? Like, I'll make a more simple dress if a fabric is super expensive, like right. a small little mini dress. But if the fabric is not that expensive, I can go crazy on the trims, like add all different types of trims, like cutouts, et cetera, and like make it a little more complicated.
Yeah.
So you kind of just balance it out with like the price point.
Right.
Of everything inclusive of the design. Right.
So how long ago did you leave Revolve?
Well, I should have got the dates for you.
No, you don't need it. Just like, did you start your own brand after that?
Yes. So I started my brand basically right after I left Revolve. And actually, no. I worked for my friend who owns a swimwear factory. And so he has a swimwear factory that does like amazing, like, he produces for like Mara Hoffman. He does like Tropic of Sea. He owns half of Same Swim. They do Jade Swim, like all these like very reputable swim brands. And so I basically came on and helped him start kind of a new division of his company where it's not just he's producing swimwear. He wanted to like develop and design like new brands with people. So for example, like we did Emily Radajowski's line in Emirata.
Cool.
So she came in with like this idea to start a line, and she had all these like sketches and ideas of what she wanted to make. And like my role is basically being the liaison between the client and also the factory. So I'm the middleman that's like taking their inspiration and sketches and ideas, and then pitching like fabric options, like print options, developing the prints, and also like working with the pattern maker to on construction details of like how to make it the way that their vision is. Mm-hmm. And so within Emirata, like I helped, like I created the line sheets for it. I like created their first logo and like her first hang tags and like packaging and all that. So it was cool. Like I did that. And then we also did Baja East, like they had swimwear that kind of went with their ready-to-wear. So it was kind of, it wasn't like I designed it. It was more like he would give me the collection and just be like, what like kind of suit can we make out of this? And it would just be pretty simple, like designing a one piece with like their like, you know, logo print on it or something like that, like pretty simple. And then we also developed like a couple like new brands, this brand called Dipped in Blue, which is, do you know that brand, like Chrome Heart?
Yeah.
It's her like 14-year-old daughter's swimwear line. And it's like her 14-year-old daughter and her best friend. And they're like so cute. And
they are so cute. I've seen them on Instagram. They're adorable.
They're so sweet. And so, yeah, we helped like develop and start that line. And I helped them like make their logo and do their hang tags and everything. And then
what's the brand called, your friend's brand,
the factory company? It's called Advance Apparel of LA, so AALA. And we also did I don't know if you watch Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
But do you know Dorit?
Yes, love Dorit.
Okay, so she has a swimwear line, and she,
yes,
like,
she does.
Okay, so we were on that show.
Oh my gosh.
Like filmed a couple episodes in the factory, and so we worked with her and her team to, you know, do that, create all her samples, revamp the line. I helped like make the logo for it, and then you know, doing all the samples for that runway show that they did at the end of the season. And so, yeah.
That's awesome. So then what led you to create your own bikini line?
I think it was just kind of like a natural transition, because I always wanted to start my own line, and I always had like designs and samples ready to go. But like in the beginning, I produced both swimwear and clothing. I mean, sampled, not produced. And once I like did the costing, it was just like the clothing was just so expensive to me. I would have to charge like a ridiculous amount to sell it. And I just feel like I'm a consumer myself. Like I can't afford to buy like $300, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I wanted to be, I wanted the line to be like accessible to everyone, you know? So it just, swimwear was just the best option. And the, like, it doesn't cost as much to make swimwear, because like the yields that you use on the fabric of swim is like so tiny compared to like what you would use to like make a garment. So it just was like the cost was just better. And also like because I had relationships with everyone at the swimwear factory, like it was just kind of really easy to like work with everyone.
Yeah.
And get samples made and stuff.
Right. And I know your pieces are very unique in that they're sustainable, locally produced, made from recycled fibers. Can you tell me a little bit about that? So what was the motivation behind all of those factors?
I think like, I mean, sustainability is always something that I think everyone should think about in terms of creating something. I think with the fashion industry, it's very, we produce a lot of things, and fast fashion like adds so much to the landfill, and just we're kind of just like trashing our planet with so much excess. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this pandemic has really exposed that in a lot of ways. And so I found this amazing like Italian fabric mill called Carvico, and it's actually a fabric that a lot of swimwear brands use, but they basically use like recycled plastics from the ocean and plastic waste and create like a new regenerated nylon called Econo yarn. It's like a regenerated nylon yarn. And so that yarn is like SPF proof. And
yeah, we need to get into that too. Do you know the details behind that?
I don't really.
I've never heard of an SPF fabric.
A lot of, actually, like if you look at like Mara Hoffman Swim, like a lot of these swimwear brands use this fabric. Like Reformation. All of Reformation Swim is also using the same fabric, but it's like, it's all SPF proof, like chlorine resistant, like it has amazing qualities to the fabric, because I think it's just like a natural thing that comes when you, it's the regenerated nylon that they create with all the like plastic waste.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that fabric, are they, is that company, it's an Italian company. Is it based in LA or Italy?
In Italy.
Is it more expensive?
Yes, but it's also comparable to a lot of other like swimwear fabrics. It's not like crazy expensive or anything.
Right. But
yeah, it's amazing, like the fabric.
I feel like there are a ton of bathing suit brands, like you just mentioned, like 10, especially with the emergence of social media and the prominence of Instagram. What do you think sets your brand apart from other up-and-coming bathing suit brands?
I think, like, so when I design, I really try to, that is the struggle with owning a swimwear brand. There's hundreds of thousands of swimwear brands that all kind of look the same. And so that's something that's one of the most challenging parts about having a swimwear brand, is kind of how do you distinct yourself from other brands? And like, I think like the way I see it is I always try to create something that is looks new by, let me try to like reword this. I try to create a design that like I haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Using a body that is proven to work. So for example, like a string bikini is like a classic style that everyone has and everyone wears. And so I created like one of our styles is called the cutout string bikini. And it's basically like a little tiny sliver of like an angled line with like a binding, and then there's like a clear mesh in between. So there's like this very distinct design quality about it. And so I feel like when you see that, it's recognizably mine, because I've never seen a style like that. I mean, I personally haven't. I don't know if you have, but yeah, like I feel like the mesh that I use, it took me probably about like 3 years to source that mesh. Cause I feel like with swimwear mesh, you still kind of can see the fabric, you know? Like I really want a mesh that is sheer, like genuinely sheer, where it looks like the clothing is kind of floating, mm-hmm. not like you can see like the beige, like,
right,
nude, you know. And so it took me a really long time. I sourced like all over, and then I finally found this like one factory in Canada that like makes this amazing mesh, and it's super clear, and I use like two layers of it for security, but even with the two layers it looks completely sheer when you have it on. And so yeah, I feel like it's like just using really high quality fabrics and just creating something that looks distinctively yours.
Right.
You know?
How do you go through the process of sourcing a fabric? You said it took you 3 years. Are you emailing different suppliers or going to see them? How does that work?
All of the above, I would say. Like, there's a lot of fabric vendors locally in LA as well. So you kind of, you know, like first like reach out to everyone and see if they have a quality that you're looking for, and if so, like you'll go set up a meeting with them and try to like find it. And then you would also, I also source like overseas as well, and I think like it's easier for me because I've been in the industry for a long time, so I have like resources to look for, and like I've worked with certain fabric mills before, and I think it just takes a lot of like experience, as well as like, I don't know, like sometimes I'll ask a friend that I know uses like an amazing certain fabric, and I'll be like, where did you source this? And it's not to say that everyone's willing to kind of give up their sources, but I think like a lot of my close friends are in fashion, and so it's been easy to like kind of get their help also to source if I needed. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's doing a lot of like research just online and like looking and using your old contacts, and also asking like the factories that you use, like oh, do you know of anyone that would have this fabric, you know?
When you worked at Revolve, Nasty Gal, BCBG, did you, when you created a design, did you then have to source the fabric that you wanted to use, or did those brands only use certain suppliers?
I guess a little bit of both. I think like when a company is really small, they don't have the capacity to hire someone that can handle all the fabrics, because there's usually a fabric R&D person. But if the company is really small, they don't have the ability to hire someone like that. So you as a designer would kind of have to work with like the team, the production team from before, and try to figure out ways to like source new fabrics.
Right.
And it's fairly easy if you know a bunch of fabric mills. They would always just send you a bunch of headers, and like you kind of keep like a stock of all these headers in the office and always just like go through them and like save them for next collections and stuff like that. But usually like with fabrics, the fabric R&D person wouldn't handle that.
Right.
So you kind of either give them direction of what you want to develop. Like, let's say you want to create this like this textured fabric that has like this embroidery on it. Like if you send them the inspo, they should be able to go out to these like fabric mills and try to like create it for you.
Right.
Or they also, every season, like at Revolve, she, like our fabric R&D person, would kind of source all of these fabrics beforehand, before we would design into any season. And then we'd go into the fabric room and then like kind of pick out what we're inspired by. And then, yeah, like the first step is always the fabric.
Right. Oh my gosh, also interesting. Before I let you go, do you have any advice for aspiring designers?
I would say just always be nice and be willing to work hard. I want to say be nice because this industry is really, really small. So if you are not a nice person, it will like come get you later.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
You know, like someone that you have been rude to could be like the CEO of some amazing company in the future that you want to be at, you know?
Yeah.
And also, it's just cool to be nice, I think. Like, being a nice person never, like, will harm you. So
and it makes the day so much better.
Yeah.
When you're around nice people. Like, long day on set, it's, like, the last thing you want to deal with is not nice people.
And at the end of the day, I feel like people hire people that they like, you know? Like, if you're lovely to be around and you're fun and you're just like positive, like people always want to be around your energy and hire you and recommend you for a job, you know. If you're like negative and like have a bad attitude and can't work with others, I think like you don't think that like, you know, will have a ripple effect, but it will, and it always does. So be nice, and also kind of, I guess, just like always be open to learning. Never feel like you know everything. I feel like I'm always learning something new every day still.
Yeah.
And just, you have to kind of have an open mind about that and just always be willing to like work hard for everything that you are gonna get, because I feel like, I don't know, times have really changed since, like, I don't know how old you are, but like when I was interning, we didn't get paid. It was, everything was, we did was for free.
Yeah.
Like, so many hours, and I don't know, I just feel like a lot of times like younger kids now are feeling a little more entitled in a way, like, because I don't know if it's because they're getting paid for internships, but
I don't think the fashion internships are paid, are they?
They are, yeah, because like I've worked with interns and yeah, it's definitely all pay. I think it's illegal to not pay now.
Oh wow.
But I don't know, I feel like it should go back to not being paid, because you really learn a lot of lessons.
All my internships is like, that's where I learned everything. I wouldn't take it back.
I feel like you just work so much harder when like you're not gaining anything but knowledge or like learning something from it,
yeah.
You know? So yeah, just be nice and be open to learning.
I love that. I love that. And what's next for you and your brand?
So I have a new collection dropping next week, And it's like the concept is, ever since the whole like BLM movement has started, it's really affected me. And I don't know if it's because I live downtown in LA, and so all of the riots and protests were happening like right outside my door. And it, like, one night, like, really traumatized us because they were breaking into all the, like, stores beneath our apartment. And, like, we live on, like, the 10th floor, but our fire escape, like, hits the ground. And so if they wanted to, they could have really, like, gone up to our window. And I don't know, I think, like, that just really freaked us out. And then, like, it urged me to, like, educate myself more and learn on, like, what is going on and like learn about racism. And so I've been reading White Fragility. I don't know if you've read that book.
I haven't read it. But
it was just like an incredible insight of like racism in America. I think like we grow up being taught like we don't see color, we're not racist, like everybody's equal. But like that alone creates this like false sense of like that's actually not true. And like, I feel like because we're taught that way, we're so offended when someone is like, oh, like you're acting racist or your behavior is racist. Like, because we're so defensive and being like, no, like we don't see color and like everyone is equal. But it's like the Black people and the Black community have been at such a disadvantage for so many years. And I feel like the system is rigged with like mass incarceration and all of these things that kind of like don't set them up for success. And then we're adding to that by not recognizing that there is racism in America. And so yeah. If we don't recognize it, like things will not change, you know? Anyways, so my collection is kind of about like continuing the conversation about Black Lives Matter and the movement. And I think like the mission for my brand is to always fight for racial equality. And so every month we donate to different organizations that kind of help fight for racial equality. And so the collection will be about like love, unity, and hope. And so, yeah.
Amazing. I love that. I didn't know that you donated to different charities.
Well, I started in June. So we donated to ACLU in June. And then this month, 10% of sales will go to the Loveland Foundation. And then next month, we're going to do Color of Change. And so like every month, we'll change
right.
a different organization. And I think it's just like something that really means something to me. And as a person of color too, I think, you know, I recognize the disadvantages that the Black community has. And I want to, even if it's not a huge thing that I can do, like I'm not donating hundreds of thousands of dollars, but at least like I am doing my part in a way, in a small way, and contributing to it. So,
yeah. As a woman of color, do you feel that you've been treated differently in the industry at all?
You know, I feel like prior to reading White Fragility and like educating myself more on all of these topics, I kind of ignorantly categorized myself as like the same minority group as like Hispanics, Blacks, etc. But I think like the more I understand, the more I realize like I'm not at that much of an advantage. Like I feel like in a way, like certain cultures are more respected in a sense. And so of course I've like felt racism in my lifetime, but not compared to like my African American friends. And so I feel like, I don't know, I think it's definitely there, but I don't consider myself like at that much of a disadvantage.
Right, right. I think that's amazing. I think we need more people like you in the industry. And I feel that what we're going through now as a country with the BLM movement, along with the pandemic, I feel like more designers and brands are heading in that direction, which I think is amazing.
Yeah. I'm excited, and I hope that real change does happen in our lifetime.
Yeah, I know. Me too. Me too. Well, thank you so much for doing this with me. I honestly had so much fun. I learned so much about design and everything. So thank you for sharing your story and your brand. Have fun at your shoot.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening in. Don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes. With love, Tosh.